do an introductory remark. You know why we are here today. I'll ask Mr. Kotze to give us apologies. It appears something is not so right on this side. So, but he explained why the other honorable members are not here. And then, immediately after that, we give the
thank you, Chair. Following the apologies, following members are all on safety duty. This is Madam Fala, Mr. Mabunga, Mr. Faku, Mr. Fala, and then Mr. Gunyani is attending the portfolio committee on trade and business security processing legislation. So those are the apologies, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister of Energy, Ambassador Majora, the DG, and Deputy DGs of the Department, representatives of the media, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Chairperson, thank you very much for the invitation and the opportunity to come and share with you some of the key findings in the draft integrated resource plan that we have just published about a week ago. Our national development plan identifies the need for our country to invest in a very strong network of economic infrastructure that is designed to support our country's medium and long-term economic and social objectives. Energy infrastructure is a critical component that underpins economic activity and growth across our land. It needs to be robust and extensive enough to meet industrial, commercial, as well as household needs. The electricity generation and distribution landscape in South Africa is changing at a very rapid pace compared to the period before 2010. In keeping to our climate change commitment, the country has also introduced renewable energy through independent power producers. Technology advancements and the decline in cost make it possible for end users to now generate their own electricity. Increasing electricity prices have also made substitutes such as LP gas a very viable alternative for cooking and heating. Electricity demand is therefore no longer captive to the national grid as all municipalities, which depends on current and projected electricity supply and demand. While we have since 1994 made significant progress regarding access to electricity, rising electricity prices are of dear concern to us as they threaten to reverse our energy access gains. Many of our people today are struggling to pay for the services and are therefore reverting back to using wood for cooking, amongst others. This is not just the case in rural areas, but we also see this in urban areas as well. These cost pressures do not only affect households, but they also affect industry itself, with some on the edge of closing down. In June this year, I approved a framework developed in consultation with our regulator, NERSOM, which enables ESCOM and NERSOM to consider temporary special pricing agreements, which can assist in avoiding some of the companies closing down and thereby any jobs being lost. It is important, therefore, to note that this special pricing framework will not only help these companies, but it also goes a very long way in curbing the ESCOM's failing electricity sales volumes. It is for this reason, therefore, and the fact that electricity powers our economy, that our electricity planning philosophy must aim to minimize the cost of electricity while keeping up with our environmental commitments. As it is evident, the first IRP for our country was promulgated in March 2011. It was indicated then that the IRP should be a living plan, which will be revised by the Department of Energy. The promulgated IRP, commonly referred to as the IRP 2010, is currently being used to roll out electricity infrastructure development in line with various ministerial determinations issued under Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act. Chairperson and members of the court, a number of assumptions used in the IRP 2010 have since changed or not materialized. The following are noticeable changes. Firstly, the electricity demand on the grid continues to decline on an annual basis, and we're currently sitting at volumes similar to those that we saw in 2007. For the financial year ending March 2018, the actual total electricity consumed is about 30% less than what was projected in the IRP 2010. Secondly, ESCOM existing generation plant performance is not at expected levels. ESCOM's own reports show that plant availability is below the IRP 2010 assumptions of 80% and above. Three, to date, additional 80,000 megawatts of new generation capacity in the form of coal, pump, storage, and renewable energy has been committed to, with most of the capacity already connected to the grid and the rest to be realized between now and the year 2022. And lastly, cost of new generation technologies has significantly come down, and this can be seen in the cost of wind PV based on the projects that have been procured to date. The Department of Energy therefore started with IRP review, an update process as we know in 2020. The review and update process had four milestones, and they are the development of input assumptions, the modeling of a reference case or base case and scenario cases, including analysis of results, the introduction of balanced scenarios, as well as policy adjustment taking into account development priorities, public events, and policies. Following government approval in November 2016, the department then passed for public consultation to those assumptions. A preliminary base case or reference case was also published, but for information only. The key comments that we received from those consultations were mainly around consultation process, projected electricity demand, assumed technology cost, as well as imposing of annual bill limits on renewable technologies. The public, during the consultation process, asked for another opportunity to comment on the updated RFP before final publication, and that is the reason we released the report for public input and comment. The next month, August, published then, was said to be outdated and not aligned to the prevailing economic conditions. The demand forecast was revised accordingly, and a detailed report has also been made public. The technology costs used in the plan have also been updated accordingly. The concern raised about the constraining of renewables has also been addressed by the duty as one of the scenarios to present a case where annual bill limits on renewables are removed. In summary, therefore, Chair, the report we have published has, when applicable, taken into account public input and comments on the assumptions. Our department has spent this period after consultations modeling and analyzing the various scenarios and their impact on the energy mix going into the future. Scenarios were analyzed in line with the objectives of the IRP, which is to provide an electricity infrastructure plan that aims to ensure security of supply while at the same time minimizing cost of supply, water usage, and environmental impacts. The scenarios tested include one, the electricity demand scenario, which tested the impact of violent electricity demand projections. Two, the gas scenario, which tested the sensitivity of the plan to the assumed gas price projections. Three, the renewables scenario, which tested the impact of removing annual bill limits placed on renewable technologies. And lastly, the emissions constraint scenario, which tested the impact of using a carbon budget approach to constrain emissions from electricity generation compared to an annual ceiling like warm peak plateau in time. At a high level, the review of the IRP undertaking indicates the following. The pace and scale of new capacity developments needed up to year 2030 must be curtailed compared to what was projected in the IRP 2010. Two, without a policy intervention, some of the technologies in the IRP 2010 together with new technologies will not be deployed as the least cost plan contains PV, wind, and gas only. Three, imposing annual bill limits on renewable does not impact the total installed capacity of renewable energy technology for the period up to 2030. And lastly, there is a significant change in the energy mix post-2030, which is mainly driven by the decommissioning of old coal power plants that have reached their end of life. Chairman, honorable members, while the IRP review considered a period up to 2050, the approach taken in the draft updated IRP is to adopt a plan for the period ending 2030 and for a detailed studies and engagements to be undertaken to better inform the energy mix or path post 2030. This approach, we believe, provides the necessary policy certainty while creating the space for all of us to engage in detail on the impending energy transition and the options available to us as South Africa. The engagements will ensure that the transition we undertake is a just transition and is inclusive. Some of the studies that we have identified already include a detailed socio-economic impact analysis of the commissioning of all coal-fired power plants that would have reached their end of life. B. Detailed analysis of gas supply options, both international and local, to better understand technical and financial and required mitigations for a renewable energy and gas-dominated electricity generation mix post 2030. C. Detailed analysis of the appropriate level of penetration of renewable energy in the South African national grid to better understand the technical risks and mitigations required to ensure security of supply is maintained during the transition to a low carbon future. And lastly, detailed technical cost and economic benefit analysis of other clean energy technologies such as clean coal technology, nuclear, and others. Chairperson and members, the recommended plan uses the least cost plan as a starting point. The least cost plan being a plan without the renewable energy constraints. The following policy adjustments have been incorporated into the recommended plan for the period up to 2030. The retention of annual bill limits for the period up to 2030. This provides for consistent and sustained rollout of renewable energy for the period. The inclusion of 1,000 megawatts of coal to power in year 2023-2024 based on two already procured and announced projects. The inclusion of 2,500 megawatts of hydropower in 2030 to facilitate South Africa and DRC treaty on the Inga hydropower project. As we all know, this project is very key to energizing and unlocking regional industrialization. The utilization of existing PV, wind and gas allocations in the plan to enable through internal determinations, renewable energy technologies identified and endorsed for localization and promotion. Technologies as contained in the plan are therefore a proxy for technologies that provide similar technical characteristics at similar or less cost to the system. The allocations of 200 megawatts per annum for certain categories of generation for own use of between 1 megawatt and 10 megawatts starting this year in 2018. These allocations will not be discounted off capacity allocations in the plan, but will be considered during the issuing of ministerial determinations. This will also help address requests for deviations from the IRP for qualifying plans. The policy adjusted plan, therefore, includes the following new additional capacity by 2030. 1,000 megawatts of generation from coal, 2,500 megawatts from hydro, 5,670 megawatts from PV, 8,100 megawatts each from wind and Yes. The resultant installed capacity needs to be near 2030 and consist of coal 84,000 megawatts, which will be 46% of the total installed capacity. Nuclear with 1,860 megawatts, which will be 2.5%. Hydro with 4,696 megawatts, which is 6%. Pump storage with 2,912 megawatts, which will be 4%. PV 7,958 megawatts, which is 10%. Wind with 11,442 megawatts, which is 15%. CSP with 600 megawatts, which is 1%. Gas with 11,980 megawatts, which is 16%. It must be noted, though, that while the coal installed capacity will be lower than the current installed base, it will still contribute more than 65% of the energy volumes, with nuclear contributing about 4%. Reflected on the slides now is a summary of the proposed policy adjustment plan. Chairperson and committee members, electrodes are monitored on the IRP update assumptions by the department through the medium-term system adequacy outlook filed with NERSA annually by the ESCOM systems operator to ensure we are aligned to the prevailing supply and demand balance, and we can accelerate or decelerate implementation if necessary, or even revise the plan if necessary. Chairperson, we have also noted the positive comments already being made, and we also note some of the concerns being raised, especially through the media and social media. But we look forward to receiving these concerns in writing preferably, together with supporting information and proposals. Let me take this opportunity to talk to some of the concerns which are more of a misunderstanding and probably being made engaged in detail before engaging with the detail of the report. Firstly, we have not deliberately left out nuclear out of the plan. But it is not in the plan, together with a number of other technologies, for the period ending 2030. Due to lower demand and lower cost of other technologies. Second, WEC has already commenced looking at gas supply options, and we believe, due to short lead times for gas power plants, the gas in the plan is very realistic and reliable. But the inclusion of 1,000 megawatts of coal does not violate the emissions constraints that we have adopted, which is based on our national determined contributions, the NDCs, which are similar to what we have had in the IRP of 2010. Lastly, but not least, the inclusion of 1,000 megawatts of coal has not affected the timing or resulted in a 3-year gap for PV and wind. Least cost scenario without annual build limits on renewable actually starts deploying PV and wind in 2028, which is a 5-year gap. Policy adjustment has therefore reduced the gap from 5 years to 3 years. These details we find in the report. In conclusion, there are a number of implementation issues that have been brought about by the changing electricity industry that we will also have to look at in details outside of the IRP update process. These include levels of participation of the previously marginalized South Africans in the energy sector, the structure of the industry, taking into account the decentralization of electricity demand, which is no longer, as I've said, totally captive to the national grid. The sustainability of licensed electricity distributors, taking into emerging trends such as microgrids, to mention a few. A just transition, therefore, requires that while we need to move at speed to respond to the changing landscape, we must also not leave anyone behind. The document is available for comments for a period of 60 days, which started last Monday, the 27th of August 2018. I'm looking forward to your comments and contributions so that we can really make the IRP 2018 a living plan for generations to come.
Just been taking our time in order we're going to have a short recess now in September. I know there are members of the public here we've always been interested to have the public hearings on nuclear. So and I've been promising that we will have. Now there will be no need, at least in the period that we're looking at, to have the public hearings on nuclear. The minister has just indicated that you reserve two months, 60 days from the 27th of August for members of the public, interested groups, to make their comments. So that is the process of the Department of Energy, which comments will be considered. Because we've been promising members of the public that we have public hearings with regard to nuclear, which is no longer part at least in the time horizon that we're looking at of the draft. So we think it will be useful to, at least from the side of the portfolio committee, to receive your comments. So
also remember the discussion advertised when we want to have public hearings on this updated draft, so that we too can hear from ourselves directly before the end of this 2 months that the ministry will be looking for comments. So having said that, members of the committee, it's your turn to ask questions. So I just responding to the fact that members of the public as well will have an opportunity at some point to speak to the committee with regard to their views on the updated draft. So can I have your Honorable Esteza, will be followed by Honorable Davis and Honorable McClara. Okay, I'll take you, Honorable Mbana, and I take the second. Honorable Esteza.
Thank you, President.
The public is paying for electricity.
And so that's the sum of the cost over a lifetime. And we say, let's take the $2 billion that cost us another $240 million. Because look, it was not the end of it. The program arrived. Overall, was divided by the sum energy produced equal generation to what renewable would be. And Minister, then this department came up with a sum of 116 cents per kilowatt hour. But with this one, the calculation, the levelized cost of electricity, does not include the 2.35 cents of carbon tax, 10 cents of environmental carbon generation. And how do we expect, and that's not even the water cost that I just mentioned. So renewable, I really think, is absolutely the answer. And I'm very surprised, Minister, that we sold up to 45-46% in the gas. We come to gas. Gas in the region is also. Gas, I think, they use the terminology million British terminal units or something. If gas rise by another 4 or 10 if the deputy minister comes to us that we are talking about. If gas is 7 or 6 now, the gas rise another 4, nobody will not take the industry, the transport, the gas, nobody will pay for it. Tassel gas, green gas from Mozambique, Johannesburg gas and the Kirby gas in Gauteng, sell it for up to 600% more. 600% more, which is a mind-boggling figure. There's just one other thing. Minister, have you provided for grid access for, in the IPP for electricity? If you don't address this can't be an afterthought. The whole power shift thing has changed now. Renewables has become really a source or a major player. And if you haven't made space for the grid for renewable energy, our policy and planning must be advanced. And we bring something like that. And exactly the same for gas. There must be a policy for gas also from this department. Small scale, I'm looking at my notes, small scale residential power generation could go up to 50 gigawatts, which is a lot. And if we haven't made a test for transmission, I must admit that transmission was included in an IRP update in November 2013. So it was just simple. There was really no clear policy of the information done about it.
Thanks, Honourable Stephen, Honourable Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for suggesting this for being with us today. Obviously, we welcome the investment RRP. It's been a long time coming after many false starts, so we are generally very glad that it's here and the sanity has generally prevailed. I think we've got a debt of gratitude to a number of senior people in the cabinet. I think the former Minister Nene, who refused to approve the nuclear deal, I think we owe a debt of gratitude to him and a number of other players. And I think it just shows that we can work for the good of this country if we work together. And I think a lot of credit goes to Kevin from Apollo, as well as you, Minister, for the work that you've done. Minister, there are, however, persistent rumours that members of your family have interest in the renewable sector. Can you take this opportunity today to deal with those rumours? Let us know if there's any conflicts of interest that there might be, and if so, how you would be managing those conflicts of interest. I think it's a good opportunity for you to do that today. Then on the IRP itself, I'd like to know why the two IPP coal projects were forced into the plan. It seems that they weren't part of the least cost scenario. Can you tell us why there is this deviation and how much extra these two projects will cost? Then, also on the forcing of the Grand Inga hydroelectric project into the plan, This also is not part of the least cost scenario. How much will this deviation cost, and why was this forced into the plan, and when do we expect this project to be finalized? Another issue with the RFP, I think, is the bid window 5 for renewable energy, which has been deferred until 2025. Given the delays over the last 5 years and now this delay, is there not a danger that we could lose momentum in this sector and that investment could possibly be lost in this sector? And would it not make more sense to smooth out the renewables plan over the entire time frame that we're looking at? Then, just on coal, a study by Meridian Economics said that Eskom could save a significant amount of money if it decommissioned coal plants as soon as possible. Has any thought been given to accelerating the decommissioning process, and how much money could be saved through this decommissioning process to potentially bring down the costs of electricity? On battery storage, could you tell us why battery storage isn't a feature of the plan, given that it is a growing worldwide trend? And then on gas, there's 8,100 megawatts earmarked for gas. Could you give us an outline of the various options you're looking at for gas supply? And can you tell us whether there's any concern about relying so heavily on gas, given that we need to import most of it, and how vulnerable this could leave our economy? And then lastly, the RRP should be a living plan, as you mentioned, Minister, in your speech. And obviously, for policy certainty, it would be good to know when the next RRP would be announced, and if you could commit to a very firm schedule of releasing RRPs so that we don't have these interminable delays as we've had up until now. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Honourable Matam.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, the DG, officials of the department, and my colleagues. Friends, it shows to me that we have a minister who don't sleep on the job. Some years ago, such presentations will be presented by the DG. And this one, so amazing. And, we applaud you, Minister. You have paid out your officials in particular, the DG. You are doing a very good job. This is a minister, I think, who have been waiting for quite a long time. I think even the DG is here, that is no longer presenting presentations to the portfolio committee. Thanks, Minister. My simple, right, straight questions to the department, in particular the minister, is with regard to this consultation processes. I just want to know which provinces were these consultations done, Minister. The other one you spoke about, the Treaty of South Africa with the DRC, the hydropower project, as to how are our people in the country going to benefit from this project. It's a multi-billion project. How are we going to benefit? Not the portfolio committee, the people of South Africa, in particular young people, was a segment of more than so much percentage. Young people of this country are not anywhere. Some of them are in town. How are we going to benefit? As the country, in particular young people, and the community at large. The other one, Chair, relates to this old coal power plant that when are we going to replace it? Is there any plan in place to replace this old coal power plant, Minister? I'm going through the presentation, Minister, but there will be. The other one relates to this, you said the document is available for comments for a period of 60 days, which will start on the 27th of March. It started long time ago, while in September. This document is written in our African languages. Because I'm afraid if they are not written in our African languages, I'm afraid people from a village called Tsingizi, I'm not undermining them. They are the Tsonga speaking people. They understand their languages very well. You might find you send an African document to a vendor dominated speaking people. You must be very careful about that. And I've been clarified with that too. He said, if you are not understanding, can you also check with you with that to this document? Have you considered the local municipality so that our people can be able to access such a document if it's sent out? Where do you send them? Because we've got only provincial offices, and they are very far from our people. But the local municipalities, they are for our people. I think they can be able to get them, to access them. At an even time. Or have you ever thought of using the local radio station? Because we listen to our local radio stations, but these are national radio stations, because they speak our own languages. If you send the PG to speak on some people from the department, to speak on the documents, we'll be able to listen and comment on the document using our own language. The other one, Chair, which is very important, expensive, I'm not quite sure. Have you ever considered using billboard on the issue? Yeah, the one that we're talking about, billboard. You see, some of the things can be to avoid listening to radio station when you are in a, some of us will use a taxi. You are in a taxi selector, a billboard, you can be able to go through some of the things written on the billboard in the taxi. Have you ever considered some of your things to be written on these things that I'm talking about? But no, I'm not quite sure whether it's expensive. You might go to how you are, whole budget, maybe each year. I'm not quite sure. Can be classified from that to that. Thank you very much.
We'll take the responses now. The other members have asked my only question. The Ilika project. I see what you put here in terms of what megawatts we expect. So this is the one project that is not necessarily within the entirely within the hands of the South African government. Now I want to understand what's happened with this project at this point in time, and what guarantee do we have that it will succeed, and to add the megawatts that we put into the plan. So. I'm sure you can respond to that when we respond to that question, because two members raised the issue just added to what they've already said. So you can respond to Honourable Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson, and all the members who asked home questions and also commented. I'll firstly be the officials answer some of the more technical questions, and the Deputy Minister and myself will get back up.
Yes, Chair.
I've forgotten your name.
Jacob.
Okay, I've forgotten your surname.
Jacob Mbeni, Chair.
Okay, please go ahead.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, honorable members of the committee. And good morning to members of the committee as well. I'm going to touch on some of the detailed questions that were asked. There was an issue that was raised around grid access. The IRP has taken into account what we call the transmission connections, but insofar as the detailed transmission plan is concerned, it's generally done by the transmission system operator, the ESCOM, once the generation plan has been finalized. But the plan as it is did take into account possible costs associated with transmission. Then there was a question around the additional costs associated with coal. If I remember well, put some of the details in the plan. I think for the period that we're looking at, I think we're looking at budgeting it plus minus, I think it's about 20 or so million additional to the tariff, but remember this is including based on volume, you know, it's not a real cost. The additional sort of the revenue that we paid. But I think this must also be thought of in the context of even when you, I mean, there was a point here that was made around including making sure that you close the gap for renewables before 2022. What happens in the model is that the model indicates that if you have to go with the so-called pure lease cost, the next time you need the additional megawatt in the system is 2022. When you smooth it out, it means you're making the consumer pay for that slightly earlier. So there is additional cost to the whole grid adjustment, not from one technology, but from all of them. I think it needs to be understood in that context, that any deviation from the lease cost plan has associated cost with that. And they are actually detailed in the report chain. I just don't have some of the exact numbers here. There was a point raised around the decommissioning. The plan currently used the decommissioning as it was found with by ESCOM. So this is the 50-year life of each of the plant. And again, there's a table in the report which shows when each unit at the particular station is meant to come offline. Battery storage. Why didn't we include battery storage in the plan? Battery storage, like other technologies, it does not come out because it's not at this point in time cheap. And hence, in the quality assessment, there is an indication to say that we should consider looking at renewable allocations as a problem for all other technologies that might come into the future, so long as they have a similar characteristic and are at price very close to what the technologies that are in the plan indicate, so that we don't need to get it from the lease cost. So I'm not sure if I should give a minister, but I'm going to comment on it. There was a question about the next IRP. I think the plan is based on assumptions. What do we need to monitor in the assumptions? So the plan should be checked if assumptions deviate significantly from what we have assumed, then we should consider a revision. I think it will be difficult to put a peg on the ground because if assumptions don't change, why you change the plan? So obviously, that's why the minister's presentation indicated that we'll be monitoring the medium-term system outlook assessment that has come out and filed with the regulator on an annual basis, because it will give us as well a view in terms of what is happening with some of the assumptions that we have done. I think the minister had a time to touch on.
Just to thank you very much, honorable chairperson.
Yes, you can follow your hand, just a few speaking next. Also,
I'm not going to decide for you which questions are technical, but you know that there will be several technical questions that have not been clarified properly. So I'll wait for you and the minister, and then we can see if all the questions have been sufficiently attended to. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the members and of senior officials here and members of the media and public. There are a few questions which I think have not been answered directly, but have been answered by Jacob when he spoke about the issue of the factors that are considered when you look at the risk cost. So those things do get factored in. So if you were to look, for instance, at where we are with the fact that we already have, I think, one CSP plant. Is it one that we have currently? It's one plant. And which, of course, means it's got battery storage. And right now, it is extremely expensive. So there are those things that we can factor in. It is a good technology, but extremely expensive, right? All these factors then are working depending on what needs to happen. In terms of the coal that's been factored in, I think members would have heard the minister on several occasions talking about the ICT office, that people seem to have assumed the ICT office is only for renewables. The ICT office deals with various technologies. And in the different big windows, we did have other technologies, biogas and things, including the coal one. So when this was included, it had been, as part of the process, one of those ones that had been selected. So it was already there in the same way that we had decided the 27 project. That was one of the ones that had also been selected as a preferred project. I think, so in terms of that forcing in Inga and so on and so forth, I'm a bit surprised because Inga is a very, very clean technology. Why there would be a problem around that, but it was, maybe that's for another day. In terms of the decommissioning of plants, I don't know if you have that in the in terms of the consultation process, I think maybe you need to speak to that because that also has NEFA that would have done that process initially, and then what would have happened with the last thing. So I think Jacob, if you can just go through the different consultative processes that include NEFA, and then when the IFC was released initially, and now how it's going to, what's going to be happening there. And the last one, which I am not sure, I really am not able to answer you, Dr. Mashala, is around the issue around language. I do know that with all the official languages, people should have access, but I'm not sure that this technical document will be able to actually get translated into other languages. So maybe that's something we should look at, but the issue of engagement. For instance, for my part, when I go to a particular community, it's quite easy to be able to engage around those issues. But I think it would be extremely helpful if members of parliament can also assist us, because that's exactly why we have MPs, because they are supposed to be representing our people and making sure that some of these messages go through. Because if we only leave it to the department, our outreach is not going to go that far. Thank you.
So, Honourable Mashala, so you will help me in Skukul to, yes. Honourable Minister.
Thanks, Chair. Once again, thanks for all the members who asked questions and also made comments. The first point on consultation, as we indicated last week when we released the draft IFP, it's a period of 60 days. And they would really want to appeal to committee members to
say let's finish this thing within 60 days. You yourselves have been worried at IM about the long delay in providing the RFP to give policy certainty to South Africa and to investors. My worry is that if we go through the formal process of public hearings, it will take a very long time. Taking into account that this matter has been in the public domain in any way for many years, I think many interested parties, they can respond to us in writing and so on. So that will be preferable from my side. On the issue of the restructuring of the electricity industry, I think the responsibility is not only with us, with the executive, but also the legislature, yourselves, I'm sure. If the honorable members were to dust off the ISMO bill that is before you, it can go a long way in accelerating this process of understanding in South Africa what our responsibilities are to restructure the whole facet of the electricity industry in South Africa. I'm ready myself and the department to engage on those matters. In any event, we're also going to be contributing, because it is our core function as the policy department of energy to look at the structure of the industry, including ESCOM. On gas, it is true that that the costs in land are very expensive. That is why I have a meeting that is planned with the Minister of Energy of Mozambique to deal with the issue of the agreement between ourselves as South African government, Mozambique, and Sasol, because there are many issues there that need to be tackled in order to ensure that this agreement and relationship between South Africa and Mozambique is a core mutually beneficial process. At the end of the day, consumers must also benefit out of this. But having said that, I don't know if I did indicate at the last meeting of the committee or in another forum, that in June I convened a meeting of energy ministers of SADC to deal with the issue of gas, with the large quantities of gas in Tanzania, in Mozambique, as well as in Namibia, where we decided that we need to ensure that we have a SADC gas master plan, a recommendation which has now been adopted by the heads of states of SADC. It's going to be an interstate committee that is going to deal with this matter to ensure that what is in the IFP can be realized to create a real gas market in SADC for the benefit of the whole region. On Inga, this has been a long time coming. I think it's a very good project, not only for South Africa, not only for SADC, but for the whole of the African continent. It's part of the key projects for Agenda 2063, the Africa we want. The African Development Bank President, Dr. Adesina, one of his topmost priority as the new president of the Development Bank is on energy. Like PAP Africa, and this Inga project is one of the key ones. So I think it will be of benefit to all Africans that this project is implemented as soon as possible. I'm happy to report that the person in charge of the Inga project in the DRC, Mr. Kapanji, is a former Minister of Energy, who actually one who signed this intergovernmental treaty between DRC and South Africa with the then former Minister of Energy, the Honorable Ben Matthews. So Mr. Kapanji is no longer a minister, as we understand.
but he's a, like a point man appointed by President Kabila to make sure that he executes his project. So I've met him, and we're in constant communication, and I do know that we already appointed a company, actually two companies, that will start this process, a Chinese company and a Spanish company. That was supposed to have met him in China this week during four quarter for some personal reasons that we could. What is the other issue? I think the issue of basic storage has been covered, but more than that, the issue of carbon capture, storage, and utilization is also a key thing. I think some of the proposals that are recent in the document that we've not covered each and every aspect of that, but it's also in our line of sight. I think African languages, I think the Deputy Minister has highlighted that, as well as the use of local radio stations, which we support. Then back to a question that does not form part of the IRP. My family. I have no conflict of interest at all. My family, my wife is a businesswoman. She's involved in the mining industry. She's the first black woman in the industry. Actually, the first black person to be seriously involved in mining. She's not involved in energy. So there's no conflict of interest whatsoever. But if you maybe are asking about what has been in the public domain about the 27 IPP projects. This is my answer. The 27 projects actually were approved about more than 3 years ago by the then Minister of Energy, Tina Jumat Peterson. But there was no execution of implementation of this project. For reasons that import quality is well aware of. We always complain about policy uncertainty. So my first task when I came in, I was actually shocked that there is 27 projects unsigned by ESCOM and the department with 56 billion rand that can be invested into the South African energy sector by the private sector. Huge benefits to the economy. Why should we not go ahead with that? So who is there in those 27? It was decided then and signed off by the minister. If at any point I feel I have a conflict of interest or potential conflict of interest or a perception, I'll do the right thing. But right now, I have no conflict of interest whatsoever. What is other I signed, just to conclude, I signed in Parliament every year, declaration of the process in Cabinet as well. You never find me on the wrong side.
Minister?
Yes, I think there was just the issue around the planning for gas. The department is currently working on a gas master plan, as well on a gas, which is an update of the 2001 Gas Act, and is of course involved in developing the regional gas master plan. This will then afford us an opportunity to actually look at the issues of infrastructure and pricing related to that. But I think in relation to what Honorable Ezekiel had asked, which Minister referred to, the high cost inlet, it is a reality, and the reality is that right now Sasol is a monopoly. So it's one of those things that the regulator is actually trying to tackle. But part of the planning is actually to say how do we open up the sector, have built in the infrastructure, and have competition.
the department has finished with the RP and IP editor, that we'll come back to have to immediately have a discussion on the structure of the electricity industry in South Africa. And now that we have the RP, and we have a period of 2 months finished to finalize it, we're getting closer to have a discussion about the future of the electricity industry as recommended by the committee. So we'll come back to have that discussion. I've heard in recent weeks, Minister, what you say, dust off the Gizmo Bill. We will dust it off. We follow the steps. We'll get to that. So we're from our recommendations, we're just making sure that we finalize the RP and IP, and then come back to have a discussion about the structure of the industry, including reintroduction of the economy. So that will come back to. At least from my side, I do understand what the policy framework is now with regard to that matter, so we can proceed as soon as we have clarity with regard to the RP. The second thing, and thanks very much for the meeting you had with your Mozambican counterpart. The issue of this has been a very frustrating one about what we do, because there doesn't seem to be sufficient attention paid and seriousness to that whole question of gas and our relationship with the Mozambican government and potentially other governments in the region. But I emphasize Mozambique because of the crucial part that gas would play in the energy sector in the country. So I'm quite happy that you bring attention to that. The second thing is the next thing is anger. And I don't think Honorable Davis will raise this matter as if there's an opposition to hydropower. So the honorable members will remember that introduced the report to the National Assembly about the signing of the treaty on the night that I call the night of the Iga Treaty. You know, Minister, in fact, that's the night for the first time the members of Parliament were thrown out of the House. That night. The night of the Iga Treaty. So we care about our approach to the Iga Treaty. What has been frustrating is progress being made from our side and the side of the DRC government. So you get that clarity now, so I'm sure we'll get consistent feedback with regard to how fast we're moving with that project. No doubt, the South Africans, the SADC, the continent, we know the potential of the project. The problem has been we're not moving the necessary speed. So sure that the issue has been raised. The second one, that's the last one that I think is important that you have raised, that you must pay attention to as members of parliament, is what you call the SADC master plan, the gas master plan. So there's a relationship there, and I don't know what the Department of Energy intends to do with regard to our own camp and its relationship to this SADC master plan. Honorable Davis, followed by Honorable Estelle.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to pose a follow-up based on my original question. Just on the RLP as a living plan, and the words of the Minister, your colleague Minister said that the RLP will change when the assumptions change, but I think this can be quite subjective. And I don't understand what the downside is if we just commit to reviewing the RLP at a regular interval and say every 2 years or every year or whatever is deemed the best way to do it, there's going to be a review of the RFP because that's the most certainty in the sector. So I'd just like to know, what is the downside of doing this? Then just on Grand Inga, my original question was, you know, how much does the deviation from the least cost scenario cost? So if you can just give us that figure, how much it will cost, the deviation from the least cost scenario, by forcing in Inga. And can you give us a date when the project will be finalized? You've outlined, Minister, that there's all this progress and you're working very well with the counterpart, but is there an actual date when you will have the project finalized? I heard correctly, that the two coal IPPs will cost an additional 20 billion, if I heard correctly. My question was that, but it's also why they have been forced in, because they cost so much more money. So can you please tell us why they've been forced in? And then it's still not clear to me why we can't smooth out the build out of the renewables. I don't think that question has really been answered adequately. It's really important to stimulate investment, to keep people interested in the projects, to smooth it out and not to have this significant delay. So please can you just explain why you can't smooth it out and what the downside is to smoothing out the renewables? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Minister, thank you very much for your comment, Deputy Minister. I would say that this was told quite a few years ago, or in 2008, if I remember correctly, to produce or give a renewable feed-in tariff for the country. At first it was so low that nobody wanted to accept it, then it was too high, but then ERCOT's role in the energy bid process was watered down completely. And that's why, Minister, ERCOT now is saying that we sell, and this is consequent management, this is where we fail, you know, so much in the department, but more from ESCO. ESCOM is selling electricity for 124 cents a kilowatt hour, which is not true at all. They're selling it to the public for 181 cents an hour. And there is a difference. There's a difference between the rural area and the metro and things. But it's a huge difference. In the rural area, you can buy electricity for 114 cents a kilowatt hour, which is under ESCOM or under Minister's price. I don't know how can it make business sense. No wonder ESCOM wants to claim back another 32 billion rand from the public, and this has already been permission for, I think, 39 billion rand. You get back from already. So you can imagine, Minister Majora, I apologize for looking at you, you're the most technical person here, I think. So you would realize that the demand will collapse completely. The whole world, economy is on supply and demand. That's what everything revolves about. And if we talk about, I still insist, and I think the chair will remember, I still say that nuclear energy is one of the cheapest, most reliable energy that you can get, but South Africa can't afford it through our history of corruption and things that we can never have built nuclear problems. Not with the what we've seen with Kusili and Madupi. Let's not talk about Safari 1 that produced the cheapest electricity in this country at 45 cents per kilowatt hour. That was both when Yari Smart was still a corporate. We can't just never compare that with anything in this. Now, but we are effectively paying 181. Now, nuclear, the renewable energy. Renewable energy is compared to the fixed cost. And remember, the supplier must always pay when a bid window is established. And then last bid window fall, it was established that wind energy would be 65 cents per kilowatt hour. Solar at 89 cents per kilowatt hour. But Minister, that only makes good sense. That only makes good sense for renewable energy. For as the colleague up there said, what about the poor people? That's where in your rural areas and the things, that's where renewable energy will make a complete, and then the industries and mines and things, would make a huge change. absolute change. And South Africa's growth completely hinges on spending. And if households haven't got money to spend, there's going to be no growth in this country. And energy is the most, I mean, I'm not saying that, but it's other, it's one of the winter pieces that now trying to claw back money again. Maybe not. But still, the role of this department is to oversee it. And it's not a lack of legislation, I think it's a lack of oversight of this department. I think it is.
It seems we'll finish here, so this is the last round of responses. Quite a presentation. And when I would say this, did you serve with me for a chance to work? You keep on repeating the statement. I don't know who's going to start. Minister?
Thank you, colleagues. When do you think that we finished? I can't answer that question now. But I told you that we started engagements with the special minister Kabangi of the DRC. It will be when I meet him and see all the relevant documents and plans of these companies that they've appointed to start the process that one will know precisely when it will end. But they require us, because we are the critical component as an off-taker in South Africa, to make the project well. So it is in our best interest that we work as soon as possible. I think on the issue of a living plan, I don't know the Honorable Davis once, because Jacob has answered this question consistently. On the issue of nuclear, I think Mr. Hazen. Answered exactly. On the issue of ESCOM, I think the portfolio committee has an oversight responsibility over ESCOM. Our role is that of a policy department, and obviously we give them a lot of work in terms of the playing fields and so on, but we are going to be consulting with them even on this IRP. That's how we're going to be exercising our role as well as a department. But otherwise, from what I can gather, we still have a long way to go to start solving the issues with the portfolio committee.
Can we adjourn? You don't want to adjourn, Honorable Davis. Two questions. I don't remember which ones. Repeat those. $20 billion, Honorable Davis. Cool. Regardless of whether it's renewables, coal, or any other technology.
when you smooth out renewables, it means you are imposing cost, obviously, additional, because that's not the discourse point. So you are deviating from the discourse point. And it's all in the report chain, it's explained. In terms of the cost associated with this, it will explain that the overall, and maybe that's where the 20 million gets confused, the overall percentage of tariff increases in P, once you've done the policy adjustment, when you're sitting in 2020, it's about 5% more to what you have paid had you gone with the risk of. You know, so in terms of that, that's what happens. And you are specifically around renting that. When I briefly looked on the graph here, obviously not to the detail, I think you're looking at the additional 2 to 3 cents more. Same with coal. I think we also need to think about, you're talking here 2,000 in a system of about 40,000. So it's volumes as well in terms of how it's going to be. But Chair, I can maybe take the number up to the details of the detail. Let's continue.
You can do what?
I can perhaps clarify in detail in line with what it has brought after the meeting, if necessary.
Don't do that to one of the things at certain meeting. You must account here. Okay. So one of the things, don't force the difficult questions. I must give credit where it is due. I think it's important as members of parliament that first we should appreciate that the fact that now the draft is here. We can engage with it and it will now reach finality. Second, that we're moving in the right direction. So what we should be doing as members of parliament is that there will be no deviation from the right direction, that the right course has been clearly taken. So I think everybody, at least those ones in public who have been commenting, in general terms, South Africans agree we're moving in the right direction. So I think we've got to say that, to commend the department for doing what is right, and to ensure that we can hold them accountable for the things they said they are going to be doing in terms of the draft that has been. So, we haven't finished, we'll engage with it. We have heard the minister about the public hearings and the potential delay. I can assure you, we have no intention of going beyond the 2 months. In fact, we have been having the 1 month, but we accept that other interested groups have said that they need more time.
We had wanted 1 month, but NEDLAC said it was.
We hear that. So we would have been happy if I'm not been waiting ourselves. So we'll engage. So there's no way that from the side of the portfolio committee we're going to delay this process. Another one, Davis, you have been. We can talk to you better outside if you want. I think we should give him the answers outside. Okay. Can we now adjourn? Thank you, members who are here. Hopefully the rest of the members will be here next week. Please go ahead. The meeting's adjourned.